there and welcome to another episode of the Pure Property Podcast, where we talk about all things property and property investment. So I'm joined with Matt again, as usual today. How are you doing, Matt?
Yeah, all good, thanks, Toby. Obviously, we're getting into the Christmas part of the year. Obviously, yeah. December now, it's flown by the year, and yeah, I guess we're getting all the Christmas shenanigans in there. So yeah, it's that time of year where there's lots going on, and yeah, in the property world, we've been quite busy, haven't we? How have you been, Tobe?
Yeah, to be fair, as you said, it's been busy. We're coming to that now festive part of the year. We tend to find, I mean, seasonally, sometimes you can see a bit of a slowdown, which is the normal, while people's focuses go elsewhere. Solicitors scrambling hard so they can get as much of the conveyancing process done to hopefully exchange and or complete before Christmas kicks in. So it's a very fun all go period, and then you chuck in the mix of obviously the festivities of Christmas parties, gatherings. Oh. I mean, we were at one last week. We went shooting. Yeah. How did you find that?
Yeah, it was good fun. Yeah, I'd never personally done it before. I think you'd done it years ago, didn't you, say, Tobe?
So I pretty much started from scratch.
But no, it was good fun. It was definitely a new experience. It took a while to get there, didn't it? Yeah. We had a terrible time getting up there, but eventually we got there and it was great fun. It was with some of our very good partners of ours that we went out with, and yeah, it was good fun, wasn't it? We had a great time.
Yeah, I mean, if any of the listeners listen to our last episode with Alliance, it was them who nicely took us there, treated us to some shooting and a few drinks and food afterwards, which was good. And
yeah, it was
good. Pretty sure I did beat you. So
no, never. No, pretty sure, honestly.
You weren't even scoring.
That's a silly question.
Let's just set the record straight for the podcast. You weren't even scoring correctly.
Bearing in mind that obviously the first couple of times you're hitting maybe fours, fives.
I don't think you were.
I actually hit a 9 out of 10 at one point. Okay, but
that was that was on one particular.
Yeah, but every round. It was 7 to 9s throughout the whole last three periods. Honestly,
we'll agree to disagree on that.
We'll have to agree to disagree.
I had from a very credible source that was not the case. But hey, that's
I don't know
that.
Who that source is.
Yeah,
terrible source.
But no, it was good. Obviously, we went out with Alliance, and there was other people from our industry there, from mortgage brokers, people in the finance sector, other companies that do the same as us. And it's always good to have a catch up. And a good chinwag about what's going on in the market, which is good. Literally the day before that, I was actually on a podcast, which will be coming out soon. Again, with companies that do the same as us. It was a bit of a sort of round table podcast, four of us, which is really, really good. I'm looking forward to that coming out. But again, that was really nice just to be talking to people within the industry. And one thing I noted from that episode, which when it does come available, I'll definitely share it on here so people can listen, but it was really good hearing the different perspectives from the different parties sitting around. We all do the same thing, all in the same industry. We had slight different perspectives and we had slight different variations of how things are done or experiences as well, but the actual underlying factor was we all had pretty much the same message. And we all had sort of the same goal for our clients in the end, which was really, really nice to see, actually. So I'm looking forward to when that comes out.
Yeah, definitely. No, I think it's always good to get an insight, as you said, Toby, from others that are in the same industry as us. Mm. We know property is a massively, like most industries, to be honest, is massively opinion-based. So everyone has their own opinions. And I think in terms of that, it's always good to hear from other people that are doing a similar thing, if not the same thing, kind of how they're finding things and what their thoughts are on the market, etc. But as you said, the underlying point there is that it is all kind of following this similar path, as you'd probably say. So, but yeah, in terms of the episode today, what have we got lined up for the guests?
So we're going to be covering quite an interesting topic overall and something that is becoming ever more popular, and that is short let renting your property out and standard long-term rentals, like basically an AST, assured short-hold tenancy, versus short-term letting. So traditional letting versus short-term letting. We're going to compare the two and really go over that, because again, it's becoming more common, the short let model, due to potential higher returns and yields, and it's being spoken about a lot more. It's in the media a bit more as well. So it'd be good to cover that. And this is going to be our second to last episode for the year. Next episode will be our sort of Christmas finale while we'll break up, which is going to be a good one. That's going to be a good episode. So if you listen to this one, make sure you tune into the next one when it does come out. And if you are going to watch this, the video version, I think we'll have to make a festive effort, don't you?
Yeah, we'll get some Christmas jumpers, maybe a couple hats, and
yeah. Might bring you a beer. Might get you to talk a bit better.
Wow.
I'm joking. Right, so why don't we kick things off? Matt, why don't you give a understanding of what a short-term rental is?
Yep, so in short, we would say short-term let is putting your property on the open market on sites such as like your Airbnb, booking.com, and it's basically letting out your property on a kind of per night basis rather than a standard AST, which you'd obviously have someone in a contract for 6 to 12 months. It would literally just be on the short term side, having someone in there. You can obviously, it depends, we do see some short term lets have 3 night minimum stays, etc. But it's being able to put it on the short term let market, and people are kind of what it says in the tin, to do short stays.
Yeah.
So for short term. So, I mean, look, it's not all short term. We do know of some people that would end up, maybe they're kind of relocating. Mm-hmm. And we know of some people that have stayed there for 3 to 6 months.
Like a stopgap type.
Yeah, exactly. So it can still be a good amount of time. It doesn't mean that it has to be one or two nights all the time. Mm. A lot of the time people get a misconception that it is always, you're only going to be able to rent it. And how much can you do it for just one night? And
yeah.
A lot of the time it is people that will book for sometimes a week or 2 weeks, as we said, 3 to 6 months. So yeah, I think it's a model that we've seen become more and more popular over the past couple of years, especially, as you said, Toby, because of probably the investment side, and it's been in the media a lot more, and probably as well investment companies, especially when you're seeing the numbers of what it can kind of stack up to. It does sound quite attractive to some people, especially as an investor. You're sitting there and you're seeing potential, some of the returns. It can be an attractive model for renting out your property rather than your standard AST.
I think technology has been a catalyst behind the short-term let model taking off. When I talk about technology, I'm talking about technology and software and sites such as Airbnb, booking.com. These sort of
massive
sites have really sort of brought it to the forefront because it's accessible and easier for people to do.
Yeah.
Then factor in, there's more management companies now able to take that off the hands of investors as well, to make it a hands-off process for them. And obviously with the returns, it's kind of always going to go that way, get more and more popular because you've got the easy access to it, you've got the higher returns, and a more hands-off approach with the services that are now offered by certain companies. Mm-hmm. And that's definitely been a help. But yeah, correct. So the short-term let model is generally anything that's rented for less than 6 months on a short, like I said, a nightly, weekly, sometimes a monthly basis, but less than 6 months, which then brings you on to an AST, an assured short-hold tenancy. So that's what we call your traditional long-term let.
Yeah.
So it's anything 6 months and over. You tend to find that a contract for renting out your property on a long-term basis will be a minimum of 6 months, or you may aim for 12 months just so you've got that security as a landlord, or a tenant may request 12 months and they've got that security as well. So that's that's pretty much how you describe both of those options. Now, what would you say is another main difference? We spoke about time length. What's another main difference, would you say, between a standard long-term AST and short-term?
I would say one of the probably major things for an investment point of view, if you're a landlord or a landlady who owns a property, is the costs.
Yep.
Which is good obviously point. A big thing. Your outgoings is obviously a major factor. Of course, with a short-term let, you might be able to gain, I guess, much more income if you look at it from a gross perspective. But of course, we all like the net amount because that's essentially what we are going to be getting at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
So something I would highlight is the outgoings, of course, on a which we know on a long-term let is different compared to the short. So the short-term let, the cost that you would usually incur, you are going to have to pay the council tax.
Utility bills.
Utility Wi-Fi, bills, Wi-Fi.
Higher management fees.
Higher management fees. You've got cleaning, of course, that's going to be needed every changeover. And also a platform fee. A lot of these companies like Airbnb will take a small percentage of your booking.
Yeah.
So look, these can be factored into certain costs and you can always charge higher to make sure those are accounted for.
Well, I suppose you do, in a way... You get more in return for
it's a nightly basis. But in terms of as an outgoings, it is a lot more involved.
Yeah.
Which to some people, it's not an issue because they still see it as, of course, it's a very high amount still coming in.
So some, even that's with a financial burden.
Exactly.
And a risk.
And still with the net, it is sometimes stacking up more profitable than the long term. Compared to obviously the long term let, your tenant usually would pay your council tax.
Yep.
Your tenant would pay obviously their own the bills and obviously their own Wi-Fi, etc. And there's obviously not going to be any cleaning or booking platform. Of course, you might have to pay for the letting fee now and again, which is going to be a much less. But in general, the costs on a long term let are going to be, the outgoings are going to be much less. But of course, thing to bear in mind is that the income is going to be higher on the short-term let basis.
So on that financial basis theme then, also one of the differences would, like we said, would probably be the income financial aspect of it. So like you said, you're renting out on a nightly basis, so your income based on a healthy occupancy rate is going to be higher month on month and per annum than a standard AST. So for the purpose of this podcast, AST is a long-term tenancy. Again, just to put that in there. Whereas an AST is a flat monthly rate that they'll pay. And they'll pay that monthly. Or some do choose to pay in advance. They might pay 6 months in advance. They might pay 12 months in advance. Also, again, that then comes down to your yields can potentially be effective. So financial differences is you'll tend to find your yields will be higher or your returns will be higher on the short let basis because you have the opportunity to earn more when renting out on that basis. Yeah. But like you mentioned, it's slightly more, you could say, risky because it's not guaranteed income.
Yeah, of course.
It fluctuates. Yeah. So again, that's why picking the right...
Yeah, which as you said, with this long-term lets, you know what you're going to get month on month. It's in black and white.
Mm.
Whereas as you said, it does massively depend on occupancy rates.
Yeah.
So of course, when you're looking at maybe the short-term let model, you probably want to make sure it stacks up in that area first. There's also, you can do your own research. I know Property Data that does some of their own research. There's, I think it's AirDNA, do a great bit of research as well. You've got to pay for it, but you do get the platform of what in your area is kind of how it's performing, etc. Or of course, you could look to speak to professionals like ourselves or companies
or a manager
that we work with.
Yep.
Exactly, that can obviously give you a bit more of an insight into maybe that location if it's going to be suitable for the short-term let model. Because look, if you live in the middle of nowhere and there's nothing around you, then realistically, are you going to be looking at getting occupancy rates of up to 70-80%?
Well, only
maybe,
if it was like
a
special cottage in a picturesque location. That's very different. But like you said, you're not going to buy a flat or a house in the middle of nowhere and be like, I'm going to rent this on short-term let. It's going to be a very low risk of that. But like you said, doing your due diligence is important.
And obviously, from a business perspective on our side, we've seen it become quite a popular method in obviously the world of the city centre apartments. Because of course, city centre, obviously people want to come and stay there. It has become a popular model within that platform. So I feel like that is something that we have seen an increase in, is a lot more of our investors now are coming to us and they're requesting the short-term let. And if the development is subject to short-term let, which is definitely something that we've seen an increase in over
very
the past couple of years.
Yeah, I know. The good you slotted that in there, actually. You have to make sure you look out for that. Maybe we can touch on that a bit later on in terms of if you're buying an apartment, what you need to look out for. But I suppose another difference between the two would be the actual, types of tenants. Mm-hmm. So you've got to remember, in a short-term let, you're probably going to be looking at maybe, there'll be like working professionals, but maybe like a corporate let where they're doing business locally and their company needs to put them there for a week, a few nights, or maybe a couple of weeks while they're doing jobs there.
Mm-hmm.
You might have, I suppose, people that are sort of traveling, so tourism, they're maybe going there as well. You may have, young people there for a night out or a holiday, just need a short-term accommodation while they're there visiting. You might also get families, like you said, they might be relocating. So it's like a stopgap for them. You even get some scenarios where they, maybe a family or a couple or even an individual, they might have fallen on hard times in terms of, I don't know, maybe they had a leak or a fire at their property and they can no longer stay at the property while the insurance is happening, while it's being fixed.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they will personally move there or insurance kicks in and pays for them to stay at Airbnb. So that's who I'd say you're probably targeting in terms of the type of tenants you're looking at there. So temporary lodgers, we'll call them. What would you what would you say in terms of the standard AST? What's the average type of tenants you'd be looking at?
Well, a lot of the time with the long-term let side of things, you're going to be looking at families, couples, a real mixture. Could be just individuals who are obviously looking for a property to stay in themselves. But yeah, a lot of the time you would be more focused on obviously a longer stay, which realistically, if you've got a family involved, etc., you're not going to be, it's not likely that you're going to want them to be moved from here to there. Mm. Obviously, people would usually want to be either near to their job.
Students, or maybe students, they're going to look to stay somewhere for 3-4 years.
Especially if they're staying at university, which we know a lot of the courses are 3 to 4 years long. So that can definitely be a route. That's probably typically what you'd be more so looking at on the long-term let side of things.
Yeah, correct. I think that's down to a T, the sort of difference there in terms of tenant types you'd be looking at. I think another one that is quite a big difference, which I don't think a lot of people do take in when they're looking at the short let model, is the actual legal implications. So with a standard AST, you're actually governed by the 1988 Housing Act. So there's a lot of protection to the tenants. Also, there's stuff covering the landlord as well. And you have to follow specific procedures for ending the tenancy, setting up the tenancy. That's one thing to consider. Whereas in a short let basis, it usually isn't covered under the 1988 Housing Act. So again, getting rid of a tenant, if they're there on a nightly basis, if you're not happy with them on the first night, there's no real rules to say they're protected. You can go and obviously have to try and get them out, but you can get them out on a easier basis. So it gives you more flexibility around the property. So I think that's something which a lot of people need to remember. So there's less tenant protection to a degree in a short-term let than there is compared to an AST. So that's definitely something to bear in mind when looking at that. And I'm trying to think what else you could look at in terms of differences.
I would say maybe even the maintenance. We do know with some of the short-term let platforms is the fact that sometimes I do know of some that do take kind of holding fees. So if you are staying for the night, they will, similarly to a hotel, will take maybe a credit card or a card just in case any damages do incur. I would say it's more probably allocated or purposed at maybe the higher end properties where they've maybe got a lot more things that they are more valuable to them. Whereas obviously on the long-term let, we do know if it's an issue, depending on what the issue is, you could potentially charge a tenant that, but it's obviously your duty of care as a landlord or a landlady to look after the tenants in place. So look, if it comes to a bit of damp, etc., of course you're still going to have to look after that and take care of the tenants and sort that out. So yeah, I mean, is there anything else you'd like to add on the maintenance side of things?
Maybe you could say slightly, obviously, because of the frequency of having to do stuff or the frequency of turnover in tenants in short let, you might say there's a higher cost implication to it because there's more wear and tear a lot more quickly because there's moving in and out. Ultimately, you're going to have to sort that out to get it rented out. But no, I think that's for the main differences anyway.
Yeah, in a nutshell.
I think that's probably the main ones to go through. So why don't we move on to looking at pros and cons of a standard AST and a short-term rental. And we'll start with short-term rentals. What would you say is a pro of short-term rentals?
Income.
So higher yields.
Higher income, higher yields, definitely.
Yep.
Do you want to go?
Okay, so higher yields. I would say flexibility. So we just mentioned higher it previously. Yields. So the flexibility is good because as I said, you're renting out on a nightly basis. There's no long-term contracts or commitments with the tenants. If you want to go and move in yourself, if you want to go stay there for, because a lot of people buy these places and they'll actually use it as a holiday. If they're doing for holiday rentals, they'll go and stay there themselves. So the flexibility of the short-term rental model is good. I think that's definitely a pro. You?
So what have we got so far? We've got higher income with the yields, etc. The flexibility, which I think is a massive
one. On flexibility, because you mentioned yield, I suppose it also is how you then charge.
Yeah.
So because if you think, if you're in a time of high demand, well, what do you do with the short-term rental? You put the price up. So you've got flex, whereas in a long-term rental market.
I've got a story on this, actually. So I had one of my clients. So as we all know, the European or Eurovision Song Contest.
It was in Liverpool, yeah?
Was in Liverpool.
Yeah.
I knew of someone, not personally, but a friend of a friend as such, knew of someone who knew, obviously, that time was coming.
Yeah.
They made sure they kept it available for that specific amount of time. They had a studio apartment in kind of very central location, perfect. Mm-hmm. And of course, everyone was flooding into Liverpool from all around the world.
Yeah.
Obviously, mostly the European countries coming to obviously cheer their countries on, see family and friends, etc. Everywhere was booked out, and he managed to charge, I think it was, he charged £8,000 for a studio for 2 weeks.
2 weeks?
2 weeks. 2 weeks, he got £8,000 for his studio rented out. Studio apartment.
Wow.
That's some people's yearly income on an AST sometimes.
I mean,
just because, as you said, the perfect point of the demand was through the roof.
Yeah, the flexibility, then you can charge that price. Took advantage of it. Well, I mean, look, if someone's going to pay it, someone's going to pay it at the end of the day.
If you want to be in a central location, hotels are booked out. Last minute.
And you've got the Euros coming up.
That's what we said, you've got the Euros and you've got Everton's new stadium, which is going to be hosting.
When we say Euros, I mean the football Euros.
The football Euros now, coming up in 2028, which is going to be obviously Everton's new stadium.
Get in early, get yourself a studio, make sure no one's renting out.
I think it's Manchester City's ground is also hosting games, so in and around there is going to be great. So as you said, and sometimes a good thing as well, Toby, is the fact that if you've got management companies, these guys will know that these events are coming up, so they will know ahead of time and can always do this for you. So as an hands-off investor, you haven't got to sometimes worry about thinking, oh, this event's coming up. Of course you can let them know, your management company, if you have got one. But I do know of a company that we deal with quite often. They know when events come up and they will specifically put their prices up because they know they can.
Yeah, that makes sense, though. That definitely makes sense. And I think that's we spoke about flexibility, but also market adaptability. So like we just mentioned, flexibility of putting the price up, you can then adapt with the trend. So if tourism becomes big suddenly, or if there's something going on, you can adapt with the market and you can charge accordingly and rent out accordingly. So that market adaptability is definitely a pro, I think. Any others you can think of? Pros?
I would say they're two huge pros, by the way. They're not just pretty average ones. I'm trying to think off the top of my head. Have you got anything else?
I think you could take this as a pro. Because you've got access to the property on a regular basis, the turnover, obviously, I suppose maintenance-wise, you're able to keep on top of the maintenance.
Agreed.
Because when you've got a tenant in the property,
you can't go and access it. You might not
see it for a year, 2 years. And then by the time you've got there, it's like, wow, they've let that. Because again,
it's worn away.
Some tenants may not keep it as well as you would personally, because I suppose it's not their forever home in some scenarios. And some stuff may get worn and you haven't seen it. So having that frequency of being able to go in and maintain your property with a short let option is a positive in terms of the maintenance. So I think they're all the main ones.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, we've covered quite a bit in depth of every single one rather than just going. We could list off points and points, but
and golf into little things. But then I suppose we can go on to the cons now. So what's the negative? What's the disadvantages of short
higher
let?
Outgoings? Obviously, as you said, you are expected to pay council tax.
Well, you're liable. So they're liable they hire,
to council tax. You're liable to that. Council tax, the bills. So, of course, you never know. Someone might come in and have a 4-hour long shower, which your water bill will be through the roof.
Why would they do that?
people do weird stuff like that.
It's true. It's not there.
It's an Airbnb. Not their bill. You can kind of do what you want.
Yeah, I'm just going to
shout. That's the only difference I would say is, as you said, like the control of it. When they're going in there, it's not like a long term let where you can really assess who. I mean, you do sometimes get a say on some platforms, I believe, on who comes in and who comes out.
Yeah.
But you're literally just basing it off of their profile.
Yeah.
Which realistically, you haven't got as much protection in place as a long term where you can look through how much they earn, make sure, of course, they're equipped to afford it all, etc. And you've got a bit more of a background of the individual that's coming into your property.
That's a very good point then. So, yeah, I think a big con, which you'd earn a disadvantage, you have to think strongly about is, like you said, it's the cost, the higher costs, whether that's the management fees, like you said, the operational costs, such as paying the bills, the overheads, the Wi-Fi, wherever it may be. The marketing costs, like Airbnb platforms, you have to pay for all those.
Yeah.
And then also, something we haven't touched on with the short-term let option is, if you're buying a short-term let option with a mortgage, you need to be taking out a mortgage product, which is set up for, so like a short let mortgage.
Yep.
And they can incur higher costs because the mortgage company looks at it as a higher risk. Like, hang on, if you're not getting regular income, this is higher risk to us. We need to charge you a higher rate.
Yeah.
So that is an additional cost which you'll need to factor in. I mean, look, you would hope that that's outweighed massively by the higher income, but it's definitely same because, again, you're liable for that cost. The mortgage is in your name or your company's name, but you're still a guarantor for that mortgage. Same as you're liable for the ongoing overheads such as the utilities, etc. So, yeah, that's a disadvantage that you definitely need to take strong consideration. But with the right strategy, right location, right purchase, then you would hope that they wouldn't be an issue. And then, suppose, what's another disadvantage you could say? Well, maintenance. I know we said the flexibility of being able to go in and maintain your property and keep on top of the maintenance. It's definitely a pro and a con because there will be more wear and tear because people are coming in and out more often. So genuinely, you will get more wear and tear. You need to keep it spick and span and in top condition to be able to attract and charge the higher rent and get people to leave you good reviews, have a good time, reuse it. So the maintenance costs is obviously, I would say, is probably on average going to be higher.
I would say potentially a con at times would be the neighbourhood nuisance in terms of you never know. True. We do know now and again of I guess, parties that can take place at these sort of venues or I should say apartments that or even houses that are hosting these, Airbnb as such, which can be, I mean, realistically, sorry, the wear and tear, as you said, once again, it does kind of factor in that, but massively on, you don't know who's coming in. Once again, going back to that point, they could have a party.
Hen party, again, stag party.
Stag party, hen do.
Not want to see what they leave
as
in there.
As we said, the aftermath, the cleaning costs, it can potentially
be. It's in the hangover, right? Imagine coming back the next day, finding Tigers and Mike Tyson in your room.
Yeah, exactly that.
Actually, I think that would be too bad. I'd probably take the hit for that because that would be quite hilarious.
Yeah.
I think. I don't know.
But that's something definitely to factor in is, unfortunately, and unless you're there sitting or you've got a property that's right outside and you can kind of keep an eye on it, realistically, they could have a party that could also disturb neighbours and it could become a thing where neighbours in the area start to get a little bit annoyed with what's going on, which can also affect. But look, that's obviously subjective to what's going on. But look, we do know it does happen now and again and you haven't really got as much control. We do know some companies though that do kind of have kind of noise. I think
noise monitors.
So they can tell
if good. It's being too loud. It's good to be proactive like that.
Absolutely.
I think that's good. I think probably the last two I'd finish on in terms of disadvantages are the inconsistent income, which we touched on.
Yep.
So not having the regular income because you're charging on a nightly basis. So you have to be aware of that. And I'd probably say it's going to be more intensive management-wise in terms of management. If you're doing it yourself, it's going to be massively. Even with a company
on
board doing it for you, you're probably going to be having a few more phone calls. Hopefully, not too many more, but there'll be a little bit
more labor intensive,
slightly higher, more intensive from a management point of view. But I think they're the main disadvantage. Definitely. The one which we touched on earlier, which we will elaborate on now quickly, is obviously making sure the property is fit for purpose. And that's not just location. like you said, the lease. So if you're owning an apartment in a city centre location or whatever location, if you own an apartment, why is that important to make sure that you're doing the right checks for that one?
Yeah, of course. I mean, we're seeing it more and more now within the market where in the contracts, of course, if it's freehold, it's fine. You're able to do whatever you want with it.
But leasehold?
As a leasehold property, which we know majority, if not all apartments in the UK, yep, are leasehold orientated.
So you've got the lease.
So you've got the lease there. And in the contract, sometimes it will state that you are not allowed to do short-term lets,
yeah,
in the property itself or in the development. So that is something that I would double check if you are... If mm-hmm. your main goal or purpose is to do short-term lets as a main model or strategy, then I would double check before purchasing anything that is in the contract. Or yeah, as long as it doesn't say it in there or it clearly states that you can do it, yeah, then you can do it.
Just to expand on that, actually, like you just mentioned, just to sort of clear that part up, is in terms of when you say as long as it doesn't say it in there, what you mean is, what we're referring to is, there are some leases out there and some of the newer leases that we're seeing where they don't say you can't, but they don't say you can.
Mm.
So it's quite nerve-wracking.
It's a bit vague, isn't it?
Well, it's vague, yeah. It doesn't say whether you can or can't. And from a legal perspective, that means you can.
Yeah.
But from a buyer's perspective, they can be quite hesitant because they're going, well, you're not actually saying I can. And I suppose that's protecting the freeholder to a degree.
If they start
having issues, then maybe they can deal with it. But yeah, so just look at that. Some will just specifically say you can't or you can. Some will leave it very open and vague and they won't even mention whether you can or can't. So yeah, it's always very important
just
if you're buying an apartment.
Just double check it though, yeah.
Yeah, before. Because I think a lot of these people think, oh, I'm just going to buy an apartment in a city centre location, yeah, I'm going to rent it out, and they'll buy it and then suddenly they'll go, oh, the freeholder's telling me I can't. Well, did you check the lease? No. So, well.
And to be fair, look, we know of a few, I guess, cheeky people that still try to do it or will still do it no matter what.
Yep.
And look, whether they get caught or not, it depends on
well, I mean, look, the most likely scenario is you'll get a warning, of course. It's like, look, if you're not allowed to do this, if you do it again, there'll be consequences. So you shouldn't do it. And we know people that do. And some are lucky, they get away with it. But if they do get caught, in most scenarios, it will be a hard slap on the wrist, say, don't do it again.
Just change it to long-term or something.
Yeah, again, some people think, oh, they're going to chuck me out, I'm going to lose the property. But look, I doubt that's going to happen.
Slap on the wrist,
yeah,
eh?
Yeah, not condoning it, but I'm just saying there's some shock, sort of like imaginary stories that people think of, and I'm like, no, it's not going to be like that. But moving on to an AST. So that's the pros and cons of short hold renting your property out. What about when you're renting it on a long-term basis? What would you say is a pro to renting on long-term?
I would say the security of knowing what you're going to get month on month.
It's a stable income.
Yeah, stability and security. Yeah. I would say a kind of fall under one hat, essentially, is the fact that, look, you know what you're going to get month after month and you know for what amount of time.
Yep.
And you know who the tenant is as well with the background checks of which... Of course, a lot of the time, if you're going for a letting agent, which I know we've talked about many a times on the podcast before, we've done an episode on it about letting agents, they will do all of these checks for you. But if you're doing it for yourself, of course, obviously just making sure that they are going to be able to pay and they are who they say they are. Obviously, you've got companies that can do checks and reference checks for you.
Yep.
But having that security is definitely something that I think is quite nice to know as an investor anyway, for many investors out there.
Yeah.
Knowing that you've got that, it is quite nice. What would you say is another one?
Well,
we could list, I guess, some of the similar points to the pros and cons of short term.
Well, management fees. So you've got lower management fees. So your average for a fully managed service, which should be technically a more hands off service for you as a landlord, you're going to look at 8-10% plus VAT is probably the average for fully managed.
What would you say? Sorry, I don't think we mentioned it on the short terms. What would you say the management costs are for the short term? Let's just as a rough, quick.
For me, I've gone anywhere from 15-19% is what I've seen plus VAT.
Just a touch note.
Yeah, but there is more involved, so I get that. But yeah, so obviously the lower management fee is definitely a pro for the long-term AST basis. I would say legal clarity as well.
Yeah.
So having the 1988 Housing Act to protect you and also the tenant, you know what the procedures are, you know what your rights are, you know what their rights are. So it's more clear cut. So you have more legal clarity.
Yeah. I would say less costs in general in terms of comparing it to like, you're not paying the council tax, you're not paying the utility bills, you're not paying the gas, you're not paying the Wi-Fi, etc., which of course you would be if you were to go down the route of obviously the short-term let. So those sort of costs are covered by the tenant. So your outgoings as a whole are limited to maybe just your management company, your mortgage if you've got one.
Yeah.
And of course, that would be it, unless you've got an apartment, which would be a service charge involved as well.
Yeah. I suppose another one is like longer tenant relationships, is in terms of, I've had tenants in one of mine, I'm pretty sure since I first took it in, God, when is that? Must be over 5 years now. They must have been there for about 5 years. And yeah, they've been there the whole time. It's been really, really good. So you've got that long-term relationship with them. They really look after the property. So you can build more of a long-term relationship, even if it's through the letting agent, for example. Like, they get to know the tenants very well. There for the long term. It's nice on that basis. So building building that in, and sometimes can lead to them taking better care of the property in some scenarios. Like, they've been there 5 years and
I'll put look after it like it's their own.
I haven't had much to do there because they're looking after it. Yes, there's some things which generally will happen, like, I don't know, maybe a leaky pipe which I'll have to go and fix. But apart from that, yeah, they look after it like it's their own. They want to be there long term. So that's quite nice. So I'd say that's definitely a pro to add in. Any more you can think of? Or do we need to move on to the cons and disadvantages?
Yeah, I'd probably go on to the cons.
Yeah? So you kick things off then.
I guess the cons are, could be, once again, going back to the short term, that is the flexibility of kind of, I guess, going and checking in on your property at any time. You can't just go and pop in there and see your tenant.
Not without the tenant's permission.
You've got to go in there, look after it. And if there is something that, for example, has happened to your property, or you could even see it from the outside, looking in, or just in general, the kind of management companies mentioned it, realistically, even getting costs and things fixed, you have to get the tenant's permission for when they're going to be there, for them to allow the builder in to fix the works, etc. So I would say the flexibility in that element of that can be sometimes quite frustrating at times.
Another one is lower yields. So with the lower risk element, right, and the stability side of things and security side of things, in turn you're usually receiving a lower yield for that, which some people do prefer. I personally think the short let model is brilliant, but for me, for an easy life, I'm just happy with the vanilla standard lower yields kind of income. That's sort of my personal take, but I know people that do very, very well and have very lucrative assets and investments based off the short let model. So yeah, I suppose it just comes down to your preference. But yeah, I'd say that's definitely the lower yield is a disadvantage when you compare it to the short let option. Oh, yeah, for sure. Massively. Anything else you can think of?
Off my head, have you got anything else?
Well, we spoke about the security on the legal side in terms of the 1988 Housing Act. That's also potentially seen as a con as well. If you need to get your tenant out, it's so hard, and that's why, I mean, you've got the new rental reforms that are being proposed at the moment, like abolishing Section 21, etc., no-fault evictions, etc., etc. They're really putting landlords off, because when there is an issue or you need your property back, it's very difficult to do so. And if the tenant doesn't play ball, it's a very lengthy and costly process, especially if they're not paying the rent, for example. It's a very lengthy process, costly process to get your property back, and That's definitely, for me, a big disadvantage. And I mean, look, that's why it's careful to make sure you're picking the right tenants and you're doing everything to mitigate that risk. But it's a disadvantage we're seeing a lot more people speak about, I think, because you see more about it in the media, and there's programs as well.
They show you the worst case scenarios.
Yeah, I get that all the time. I literally get... What happens if it's the same as on the TV? We have a nightmare tenant. And I'm like, look, obviously that is the worst case scenario, but it is definitely something that you have to be aware of. Yeah, for sure. Anything else you can think of?
No, I think I'd probably summarize it at that point. We've obviously gone over quite a few pros and cons for both. I think, as you said, I think it comes down to the investor. What is their appetite for what they're looking to do? Are they looking to try and, or I think one good thing I'd probably mention is the fact that why not try the short-term let model if you ever wanted to?
Yeah, you can.
And you can always fall back on the long-term.
Yeah, exactly. You can you can definitely dip your toe in the water. Both as well. Like if the short-term let market dries up a little bit, you can go back to long-term and vice versa. I think that's definitely...
That flexibility in itself within, for example, an apartment and having that in the lease is quite attractive.
I think also short-term lets, one of the good things is it because of its higher income potential, you are going to build up potentially a pot of cash a lot quicker, which can help you reinvest. Whereas in on the long-term rental model, obviously you've got that monthly income and yield coming in.
Longer model,
but it's a shorter drip feed. You're more reliant on capital appreciation for chunks of money on the long-term let basis. Whereas in short hold, you can potentially get those chunks of cash a lot quicker, especially if you pick a really, really good location.
Yeah. Or I would say as well, if you're a landlord who has got a number of properties and you've maybe got the standard practice of a lot of the long-term lets, why not try maybe one or two on the short-term let model where you can maybe try and diversify your portfolio, have a couple of options doing the short-term let, of course, making sure it's in the right area once again, making sure it kind of fits the bill for what that would be looking at, but yet having, you've got the fallback on properties of having secure income with your other ones and you know what you're getting each month, because as we said, you don't know exactly how much you're going to be getting on a month-to-month basis. It might be a kind of a beach kind of holiday where in the summer
holiday lets are big now,
occupancy is going to be amazing in the summer, but in the winter you are going to have a drop off, and you've obviously got to obviously just make sure you've got enough
buffer. Plan for it, factor it in, of course.
And some places are obviously seasonal and some aren't.
I think it's definitely going to be at the forefront for a long time. It's becoming popular because of the potential returns. I think one of the stats I read was in year 2020, there was one in four landlords had entered into the short let market. That's one in four. That's quite a big number. And I think it was between 2018 to 2022, they saw over 100% increase in the entering to the short let market, which was big numbers. It's definitely becoming more prominent out there. And again, getting the information, if it's something that you do want to go into, get the information, speak to professionals, do your research, because we're not going to sit here and lie. It's very lucrative. You have to make sure that you're prepared to take on what's involved with the short let option to make sure that you're happy to go down that route. But of course, there's some fantastic returns to be made.
Killing short let. Make a killing in it for sure.
For sure. Okay, anything else you want to finish on?
No, I think we'll wrap it up there.
Well, have you got your Christmas jumper sorted for next week?
Yeah, it's already sorted, mate. It's already packed.
Yeah? Wow, where are you going?
Yeah, it's packed, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'm ready. Christmas hat? I'm just ready for it. Christmas hat. I love the Christmas time of year. I think it's great.
Yeah, I'm gonna throw a little surprise into next week's episode.
You're not bringing your elf shoes, are you?
How did you know? To be fair, when on the weekends, I'm one of Santa's little helpers again. So
I'm just recycling
those.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, it's really good. Really, really good.
Fair enough.
Cool. All right then.
Yeah, it's been a good episode.
Yeah, I hope that's been insightful for people. Yeah. If you do want to know more about short term lets, if it's something you are interested in, and you do want to speak to us about it, feel free to get in touch. Because that's what we're here to do, here to help, here to inform. And we can give you our experience and our knowledge. And we've also got companies that can give you further advice. We've got management companies that you can speak to, which I think is valuable to hear it from different parts of the journey, because the management companies could hear from them. It's good to hear from agents where properties are selling quite well. And obviously the management companies where it's performing quite well. So, it's an interesting and lucrative potential asset and investment that you can go for. So if you are interested, feel free to get in touch with us at Track Capital. Right, let's wrap it up there. Let's get back outside in that cold weather. Not good. Right, we'll see you next time. Bye bye.
Take care. Bye bye.